Finance and Revenue is open. Good morning. Senator Boquist will be excused today. Senator Taylor will be here shortly. We're going to start off in order with a public hearing on Senate Bill 1035. Christine Broniak is here for a summary of this legislation, and Senator Olson is here as the sponsor.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1035 would provide a income tax subtraction for the adoption fees for adopting an animal. And the amount that could be subtracted is $400 for, or $200 for an individual and $400 for a couple per year. And they are able to subtract these amounts from their income taxes. And so the revenue impact of this is estimated to be $200,000 per year and $400,000 per biennium, just a little bit under that.
What's this, what, 0.193?
That's $193,000 per year.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see if we can get this thing started. Are we ready? Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alan Olson, members of the committee. I'm Senator from District 20, the heart of Clackamas County. The greatest of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated. That was a quote from Gandhi. There simply aren't enough good homes or even cages for them all. Animals of all shapes and sizes end up in shelters. Please look at these faces of animals seeking a new life. Can we deny them their chance? Senate Bill 1035 creates a subtraction of $200 for the expenses of adopting a pet. LFO estimates the cost to be $193,000 a year. You should have that report in front of you. I've emailed it to the committee. We are only asking for a small amount of resources. If we don't or won't give them a chance, this could be their fate. These are the options we have: pain and suffering, or love and contentment. The choice is ours. Will we be a great nation, as Gandhi stated? Let's make it easier to adopt a pet and save a life. I ask for your support of Senate Bill 1035. Thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Questions of Senator Olson. Senator Birchsiger.
Where did you, you've come a long ways with your PowerPoint presentation, Senator.
They're kind of rudimentary.
Do you have any idea how much does it cost to adopt a pet and take care of them? And do you know that on those figures?
Well, prior to this this bill coming forward as a tax deduction, I had it as a tax credit. We testified in front of Environment and Natural Resources. Senator Courtney said in his testimony that the Humane Society, Willamette Humane Society, starts at $100 and goes up to $350. Kittens, which used to be given away free in front of grocery stores, are now available for adoption for $100. Marion County Animal Shelter dog adoption costs $175, and dog adoption fee is $250. But this doesn't include the fact that the animal shelters spay and neuter the animals. They give them all their appropriate vaccines and their rabies shots, so it's quite expensive. As a matter of fact, in that testimony and the other committee, the cost to take care of a sheltered animal is about $1,600. And if we look at some of the material that has been sent in opposing this effort, we find that of the $1,600, if you multiply that by the 33,800 animals and the proposed opposition, that's $54.1 million in costs. 54.1 million. We're asking for 193,000 support, and that's an estimate. We don't know that everyone will use this. And if you take that $193,000 and divide it by 33,800 animals, that's $5.72 an animal. I think that's a very modest price to pay to give these animals of their life back, their opportunity to live a wholesome life. And then you saw in those pictures, look at those children. I mean, pets are extraordinary. And they go a long way to making a whole loving family. And I ask your support on this bill.
Senator Olson, we always ask when people, businesses, whoever come to this committee for tax credits, tax deductions, tax breaks, where they would find the additional money or where what other tax deduction they would eliminate to make room for this. Do you have an answer for that?
I wasn't prepared to answer that question, but the fact is that if you look at the amount of money from people that are given to nonprofits, and the Humane Society and the dog shelters are nonprofits, if you look at the input that they have to put in there, that $54 million, if that money was not dedicated to taking care of sheltered animals, it could go to dedicating to other sources. American Cancer Society, American Heart Association, other nonprofits could benefit, which benefits the whole society. And no, I don't have a particular answer as to where that additional money would come from, but $193,000 is a very small amount to ask, and once again, an estimate as to how many people would use this.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just have a few people standing by here. Senator, are you okay for a second? Okay, Bill. Edith Rush and Rebecca Gladstone.
Good morning, Chairman Haas, members of the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. It's hard to start the day testifying against puppies and kittens, but this measure seems to have nine lives. As our esteemed legislature noted, it first appeared as Senate Bill 326, which Tax Fairness Oregon testified against based on the fact that we have a fairly large budget shortfall this year, so giving away tax revenue seems to be a real challenge. And today you're being asked to consider a rewritten bill that is a tax subtraction, and we do not believe that any of the factors we identified in the previous testimony have changed at this time. While those certainly are heart-wrenching photos in that PowerPoint, and the view of Gandhi that this is a part of the greatness and the morality of a nation, we ask you to consider another view of a theologian who said the ultimate test of a moral society is the kind of world it leaves to its children. And I noted that one of the last slides that was up there, it has a child in there. So basically, we look at the fact that this body has given Oregon's children a quality education model, which is underfunded by almost $2 billion. So it really is a model that's pretty much on paper at this point. Our children have the shortest school year in the nation. They have one of the shortest school days in the nation. And just to put a more manageable dollar figure on the cost of something like this, I actually looked at one Clackamas County facility, which is basically an animal control facility that has lots of shelter animals up for adoption. They had 260 adoptions in 2016. Now, that's a potential reduction of $52,000 in the AGI on the Oregon tax form. And after adjusting for Oregon's tax liability, we're talking about an additional day of schooling for 93 students in somebody's school district. So this actually has an impact on the moral society that Senator Olson is talking about. At some point, all of the children in all of the districts in Oregon are going to reach adulthood and voting age. And my question is at this point, how will they understand a decision that gave precious tax dollars, which we have less than we really need, to pet adoptions before they invested fully in their potential as children? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Hollis, members of the committee, thank you for taking our testimony. I'd like to correct that I mistakenly signed the testimony form with opposition. We are only submitting comment to this bill. The League of Women Voters supports a tax system that is equitable, adequate, stable, easy to administer, and as simple as possible. We do not have a direct position supporting or opposing animal shelters or adoption. Our Issues for Action document includes no reference to tax subtraction. We do have several relevant tax deduction references. Given the concern this session for our very large budget shortfall, we want to review them. 2001. Currently, the state gives away about $27 billion each biennium in so-called tax expenditures, which include deferrals, deductions, exemptions, and credits. Though all tax credits set to expire in 2012 were reviewed by the appropriate policy committee, in the end, only $10 million of lost revenue was captured. All tax credits will now be reviewed as they reach the sunset year. Moving forward to 2003. A coalition effort to reduce these exemptions, deductions, exclusions, and credits failed to set off the predicted state to offset, I beg your pardon, to offset the predicted state shortfall in revenue for 2003 to 2005. Moving forward to 2007, for three sessions, we have been part of the Oregon Revenue Coalition, attempting to persuade the legislature to repeal, reduce, or revise the more than 350 tax expenditures that caused the state to not receive $27 billion in revenue in a biennium. The 2007 session spent months in discussion about tax credits and deductions, finally passing a complex and comprehensive bill dealing with credits, keeping some credits and providing revenues to cover those that were kept. Moving forward to 2014. The most noteworthy bill was Senate Bill 1534C with needed 2013 special session grand bargain corrections, including Oregon senior medical deductions, small domestic international sales corporations, exemptions for disabled taxpayers, disabled children, and cigarette tax adjustments. In summary, the Oregon 2017 to 2019 tax expenditure report, page 5, summary of Oregon tax programs with tax expenditures, dollars in millions, lists all taxes with tax expenditures for the 2017 to 2019 biennium at $24 billion. Please note testimony submitted by the Revenue Coalition for this hearing. We strongly urge thorough consideration of programs. Where am I? Being cut this session before adding new programs, although many in each category have merits we would otherwise support. We urge raising of adequate revenue to support necessary programs, many of which provide worthwhile long-term net savings. Thank you for the opportunity to submit this testimony.
Questions? Thank you both. Thank you. Scott Beckstead.
Good morning. For the record, Chair House, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon State Director and Rural Outreach Director for the Humane Society of the United States, here to testify in support of Senate Bill 1035. It's hard for the Humane Society to see a downside to this bill. From our standpoint, this actually is going to result in savings to taxpayers because to the extent that it is encouraging adoptions and getting animals adopted and out of those shelters more quickly, it's going to reduce the amount of expenditures for shelters, be they publicly funded shelters or be they private shelters that are 501c3s. The Humane Society of the United States takes the view that public policy that encourages people to adopt from their local shelters are to be encouraged. We believe that this bill does just that. So again, we believe it's the right thing to do for the animals that are awaiting adoption. It's also the right thing to do for Oregon taxpayers and those who support animal shelters, be they public or private. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Scott? Okay, sir, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. That's all we have signed up to testify in this. Thank you, Senator Olson. And we're going to close out this hearing and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 378. Christine.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 378 adds the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association to the list of entities that may be included on the eligibility roster for the Oregon Charitable Checkoff listing. They would still have some other types of qualifying actions to be considered. However, there's a list of entities in statute that do not have to meet the $1 million gross income requirement to be considered for listing, and so this measure would add the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association to the list that would qualify then, given that they meet 10,000 signatures and other requirements.
Is there a limit to how many entities can be on the checkoff form?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so. There's a system by which they can be rotated year after year. I don't know if there's an actual hard limit on the number of entities.
Okay. Senator Hansel.
Thank you, Chair Hass, member of this committee. For the record, I am Senator Bill Hansel, representing Senate District 29, Northeastern and North Central Oregon, definitely a rural part of the state. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about Senate Bill 378. Senate Bill 378 allows the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association to be listed on the income tax refund checkoff list. The bill has been signed onto by all 30 members of the Oregon Senate, something that, at least in my experience, rarely happens. Many rural communities rely on the services provided by volunteer firefighters. These volunteer firefighters are the first responders in rural communities. Car crashes, medical emergencies, all kinds of fires, or any other kind of first responder requirement. These are the ones that respond to your call. They receive the same training and experience as paid firefighters do. But volunteer firefighters many times have a more difficult time paying for the equipment or the mandatory trainings the state requires of firefighters. Paid firefighters are on duty or for a set time during their shifts. Volunteer firefighters are on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. In 2013, there were around 8,300 volunteer firefighters across the state. Volunteer firefighting efforts are critical to rural Oregon, and this legislation would allow funds to be given to the Volunteer Firefighters Association for various purposes. The bill does not cost Oregon anything, as the organization is already created and the state already issues these refunds. If people want to give their tax refund to this group, Senate Bill 378 provides them the opportunity. By allowing the organization to appear on the tax forms for a donation of a person's refund, we can keep the volunteer firefighters involved in their communities. Grant Darrell, a constituent of mine from the Elgin Rural Fire District, stated in an email to me, "A young volunteer firefighter with a job and family is finding it difficult, if not impossible, to juggle the time required by work, family, kids, and their associated activities with the increasing demands by the state for more training. The first thing to fall by the wayside is their desire to serve their community," end of quote. The volunteers must take training as per state rules. This includes at least one drill per week. Trainings cost money and they cost time. Time away from family, time away from their jobs, etc. By adding the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association to the list, we can help ensure the additional resources. The money they would receive goes to assist volunteers and their agencies, and some of them are some of the following ways: providing accidental death and disability insurance for the volunteers, purchase of equipment for rural communities, grants are given for trainings. If a volunteer firefighter is killed in the line of duty and their family doesn't have enough money for a decent burial, the organization steps in to provide the funds to help the family. Representative Boone has introduced this bill several times. This year marks her eighth attempt through House Bill 2595. This bill is identical to the House bill. Representing Boone's husband was the chief of volunteer firefighters in rural Clatsop County. He oversaw a stretch of Highway 26. Representing Boone served as a volunteer firefighter herself for 16 years. She would be here to testify in person on this bill. However, she is with her husband, who is receiving treatment for a severe case of cancer as we speak in Salt Lake City. I believe we have an opportunity to honor Representative Boone and her husband by passing a bill she has championed for over 10 years. The bill is a vehicle for giving those Oregonians an option to assist rural volunteer fire departments with the ability to donate their refunds and help the life-saving services volunteer firefighters perform, which are vital to rural Oregon. Thank you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Bertschinger. Nope. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Hess. I'm sorry I came in late. Good morning, Senator Hansel.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. Can you just, I just wanted to understand more about, you know, whenever we add a checkoff list on the tax form, it's, you know, a lot of folks are interested in that. Is this, what is the, can you tell me more about what the money would be used for, what restrictions, how it couldn't be used, you know, things like that?
Without going into a lot of detail, there are certain things that are listed, but it'd be basically for the support of the rural firefighters. I believe that there'll be people here to testify following that would have a better handle on the particulars as to what that the funds would be used for.
Okay.
But I've listed a few of them. It would go to provide equipment. It would go to provide training, which most of the time the volunteers have to pay on their own. And it would go for grants, provide some insurance. It would provide death benefits and help out with burials, funerals if needed, things such as this, generally support. But the equipment and the training are the big ones that this would help provide for rural firefighters.
Thank you.
Senator, this is a little off topic, I suppose, but you said you had 30 sponsors.
Well, 30 sponsors, chief, or yes, all 30 senators.
And when it's popular or even fashionable to talk about the polarization in politics, especially, I think, in some rural parts of the state, I hope you can say, now, wait a minute. I got my pals from Portland and Beaverton and Southern Oregon to join me on this.
Chair Hass, I already have.
Yeah.
I've right. made sure that my folks know that this is pretty special.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Genoa, you want to bring your team up?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Genoa Ingram, representing the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association and the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. Senator Hansel is correct. This bill has been introduced nearly every session since 2009. I feel a little bit like the Susan Lucci of the legislature. It's like, you don't get a Grammy this year, and you don't get a Grammy this year, but someday you're going to be there. So, I am here to give you an overview, and I feel like I can just do this testimony in my sleep. I've done it so many times, but I think those of you who have been around understand the issue, and so I'll be very brief, and then I am available to answer all of your questions. So to begin with, the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association is a 501c3. Before my time, before I began managing the association, they engaged in telemarketing, which allowed them funds to do scholarships for training, and particularly in the rural areas. This is very, very crucial. We coordinate with the DPSST so that we can provide DPSST certified training whenever possible, and we do take those to the rural areas. It does provide for death benefits. We used to provide funds, no questions asked, if a volunteer firefighter passed, and we would immediately issue a check, usually about $1,000, to assist that family. Since telemarketing is no longer used, those funds have been depleted. That account is zeroed out, and we no longer have funds to do the types of things we used to do. In fact, currently, our board also used to be reimbursed for mileage, and for the last several years they have not been. I believe they just started getting reimbursed for mileage for coming to our meetings, and we had people, in fact, we still have people coming from as far away as Nestucca Fire, Hermiston, Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon coast. So it was a hardship for them, but they were dedicated, and they did take money out of their own pockets, as many volunteer firefighters do. So in our conferences, I just want to talk to you a little bit about what our conferences do. Those of you who attend conferences on a regular basis for your businesses, you're probably used to sitting at a desk and being lectured to. And these conferences, and I wish I could take every one of you to a volunteer firefighter conference, is completely different from anything you've seen before. They do water rescue. They do high-angle rope rescue, vehicle extrication. The things that they're going to see when they arrive on scene, that's the sort of training that they receive. And this is the sort of training that we want to continue to provide. So by way of background, very quickly, in 2009, when I first started working with the volunteer firefighters, I believe I was up in Senator Betsy Johnson's office, and we were talking about ways to infuse funds into the association to allow them to continue their programs. And we got to talking about the tax checkoff. And so I sat down to fill out the form for the volunteers, and it said, you know, you need to gather 10,000 signatures, but no problem, they have the energy. And when they said they had to have $1 million in the bank, I was dumbfounded. I thought, if we had $1 million in the bank, we wouldn't need to be raising funds. So in 2009, we introduced the very first bill, and I just want to thank from the bottom of my heart Representative Deborah Boone. She has been with us every step of the way through these past nearly 10 years. I wanted to also clear up some of the issues surrounding the bill. Your staff did an excellent job. It doesn't automatically put the volunteers on the list. We still have to meet the other criteria. There has never been, to my knowledge, any opposition. The bill has passed unanimously in the House one session. It passed unanimously in the Senate one session. It has just, obviously never passed both houses in the same session. There was some discussion last year about the Department of Revenue. Oh, this must be the Department of Revenue dragging their feet. They probably don't want to administer this program. The Department of Revenue has already testified in previous sessions that the program is already set up. It does not require any extra effort on their part to administer the program. And you'll like this, Mr. Chair. This does not cost the state one penny. We know we are in a financial crisis. We know there are PERS issues. We know there are all these other issues. These are people who are willing to step up for free, many times with money out of their own pocket, to provide a vital service without costing the state a single penny. If taxpayers who get a refund choose to contribute to the OVFA as an attraction and retention incentive, God bless them. You know, we want to be able to provide that avenue for them. I've provided some research for you by way of vote counts, and then some history that Representative Boone requested as to when the other entities were provided exemptions, and that's included on the last page. When I testified in 2015 before the House Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee, by the end of the testimony, with the help of a few of my friends, both Democrats and Republicans joined hands and said, we have got to unite to help provide attraction and retention for volunteer firefighters. And they pledged to go forward to assist us, and they did assist us in every way that they could. However, if you look at the first page right after my written testimony, you'll see the history of every bill that's been introduced, and you'll see that the bill always dies in the House Revenue Committee. And I'd like to give you the reason for that and what I've heard as far as feedback. While there is not a limit to the number of entities that can be included in the tax checkoff, apparently we have reached the point now where all of the groups fill up a single page. And if they add one more, they're going to have to either reduce the print or kick it to another page. To be completely truthful, the volunteer firefighters don't care if they're on that page or not. Most people file their taxes electronically anyway, so it doesn't make any difference to us whether we're included on the written page or not. I have with me a couple of volunteer firefighters who will introduce themselves in a moment. I just want to close in saying, for you rural people, volunteer firefighters are the lifeblood of rural fire protection and also emergency and EMT protection. For those of you who live in the Portland area or the larger cities, for example, Clackamas, Jerry will tell you in a moment how Clackamas Fire, even though they have a large rural constituency, interfaces with Portland and some of the larger urban areas as well. To coordinate with them, we want to make sure that those volunteers are trained as well as their paid counterparts. And I just want to thank you for hearing the bill, and I am available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you for the overview. I'll let you two gentlemen, if you have something to add to the presentation.
I can't hear the chair.
He said.
I couldn't hear you, sir. I'm sorry.
No, I'll let you two go if you have something to add.
No.
My name is David Sellers. I'm currently the past president on the OVFA board. I've been on the board for about 8 years, giving my time to the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association. I've been a volunteer up till last year, for 27 years. Finally have a part-time position out of the Nestucca Fire Department. I have been to we're celebrating our 59th year of conference this year. I've been to 27 of those conferences. I can tell you personally that the programs and the training that the OVFA puts on for the volunteers of the state of Oregon is an exceptional program. We get donated instructors who give their time to come to our conferences to provide training for rope rescue, for vehicle extrication, for pumper operator, firefighter one requirements that are required by the DPSST for these firefighters to function and provide the needed services throughout the state. Over 80% of the firefighters that respond in Oregon are volunteer. They need this training. It's required. If you go volunteer in other organizations, you might have to sit through an 8-hour course or a day, or you might have to come to a few meetings in the evening to get your training so that you can provide the volunteer services for whatever organization. You can't do that as a volunteer firefighter. As a volunteer firefighter, you have to take time to either be an EMR or an EMT. You have to provide the necessary training to become a firefighter one certification in order to even be able to go in and attack a fire inside. That training has to be renewed and redone year after year. One of the things that the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association for years and years has provided our annual conference. We try and keep that conference as inexpensive as possible for individuals to come to the conference, and we try and make it as easy as possible on the budgets for those volunteer departments throughout the state of Oregon. We have had opportunities in the past to raise money. Those opportunities are becoming less and less and less. This is one way that we can get out to the people of the state of Oregon that have given to us generously in the past and give them an opportunity where it's in front of them where they can donate again to the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association. For the last several years, while I've been on the board, I've been trying desperately to try and figure out ways to take some of our training that we do from our conference and spread it out regionally throughout the state. So it makes it even easier for these firefighters to get the training that they need and to not have as much expense on the departments to travel. We try and have our conferences in all different parts of the state, so it gives opportunities for more volunteers to participate in our conference. This year we're having it at Lebanon. Lebanon has volunteered to host it 2 times for us. Next year we are looking at our 60th anniversary, and we're looking at it being down in the south coast in the Coos Bay area. We try and take our training where we can, But as I was saying, I have tried for 8 years now to try and get more regionalized training, and the funds are just not there. We have instructors that are willing to give that training for just the expense of their hotel room, but we can't put it together. We've asked and asked and asked for this to be an exception so that we can go out there and do the requirements to get on the tax checkoff, to get in front of the Oregon people, to let them know that their volunteers are out there willing to serve, but they need help with the training. And so we really like to be able to be considered for this so that we can get on the tax checkoff and at least have another stream of revenue that could come in and support our volunteers throughout the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Carney. I am the president of the Clackamas Volunteer Firefighters Association. I'm a lieutenant in Clackamas Fire as a volunteer. I just have a few comments to make. First, I have no idea where you folks represent geographically or whatever. If you're rural, you've heard a lot about rural firefighting. If you're urban, as Genoa alluded to earlier, the volunteers are involved in the urban firefighting in the fact that, as an example with Clackamas, using Portland and Gresham as examples, we run mutual aid with Clackamas, Gresham and Portland routinely. And one of the ways we're able to do that is because we have volunteer companies available then to cover the empty Clackamas companies that are assisting the urban areas. So I would say to you that if you're an urban representative, you're probably benefiting even if you don't know it. And you're probably benefiting just because you're coming here. I drove here today from Clackamas, and I made note of the fact that, boy, if I get in a wreck, if I have a medical incident, I am probably going to be treated by a volunteer most of the way down here, other than the Clackamas and Tualatin Valley Fire District areas until I got to Salem. That's just an aside comment. I'm going to repeat testimony that I gave earlier in the House. When we go to a fire, when we're summoned, we get the apparatus out the door. And that's what basically this bill is doing. We've got the apparatus out the door. But occasionally, we run into traffic jams, and we need red lights and sirens to get that traffic to move, to alert them that we're here. And sometimes we get people that just won't move, and we have to take some more drastic action to get around them. I'm asking you folks, and I guess I would ask the entire Senate, since all 30 signed on, if you could be the red lights and siren for this bill, if you could push it forward. You probably know your compatriots in the House. If you could make it happen, it would be a great help. The training that Dave mentioned is not anything that I need. I work in a combination department which is heavy on the paid staff. But when you get out in Dave's department, you may have two career members. And yes, they definitely need the training. And making it regionalized would be so much better. And it would be so much more frequent. Mm-hmm. And so much more at hand for what the situations are that they're going to face. That's the end of my comments. I appreciate your listening. I ask your support, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. I know you alluded, and did have a question about where the money would go. But before that, Christine was checking on the amounts raised by some of the other organizations on the checkoff.
Mr. Chair, it's not available that I can tell on the Internet, so I would have to make a data request for that.
Look at that. Data. What were you anticipating, Genoa?
Mr. Chair, we did some research on that, but it's been about 3 or 4 years ago. I would have to go back and look. And may I add, not to speak out of turn, but may I add one thing, just because it did come up several years ago. Someone wrote an email after my testimony and said, if the volunteer firefighters can afford a lobbyist, they don't need any additional funds. And I just want to let you know that my company, a couple of my employees are sitting in the back of the room. We do have a small association management contract to plan the conferences and do all of the other things we do, keep their web page up, pay their bills, et cetera, their membership, send out their billing. When the volunteers came to me some years back and asked if we would take them on for association management, I did not hesitate at all. Some of you probably know I lost my house to a fire. I'm out in Senator Boquist's area where, you know, it takes a long time to get out to where I live. They were not able to save my home, but they saved my outbuildings, my animals, my neighbors, and I was so grateful for that. And I've been trying to get back ever since. So I do lobby for the association, but I lobby pro bono. So for those of you out there who think that the volunteers are paying a high-paid lobbyist, no.
Well, that's what I was certainly thinking.
thank you, Chair Hess. Just to clarify, so in the bill, I was just looking through, I was just trying to understand, in the bill, is it restrict that money cannot be used for a lobbyist, or is there, this is just a, how is the arrangement made then?
Chair, through the chair, Senator Taylor, no, it does not restrict. It's just something that we've received criticism before in the past. There was, after I testified, someone emailed a legislator and said, oh, they don't need it. They can afford a lobbyist. And I just want to make it very clear that what I do for this association, I do because I care about. To me, they're my puppies and kittens.
No, that was the bill before.
Okay.
Okay, so just follow up. So you're doing a pro bono then?
I do.
Absolutely no cost at all. You don't charge them anything?
For the lobbying, no. We do charge them for association management because I have people in the back of the room who like to be paid. however, and part of it, too, is through my association with the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. I do lobby for them. And for the rural fire protection districts, the volunteers are what make things tick. And I have been directed to help the volunteers from the fire district directors as well. So, you know, they don't mind if I use part of my time to work for the volunteers.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Question, Senator Burcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I know just a little bit about the rural fire environment, and you touched on it, and I'd like to expand on it. You know, most people don't realize across the country there are more rural firefighters than anybody else. It's just a tremendous, huge force. And in my county, we have a, you know, the city of Grants Pass has a very small fire department.
Yes.
Other than that, the entire county is several different rural fire districts. That's it. And, you know, you touched on mutual aid agreements, and they're very important. Could you expand a little bit on it? Could you talk about, say, the city of Gresham gets a three-alarm fire, and what part in that you would probably play?
Yes. Well, I'll touch on it from the time that the city of Gresham gets the first alarm. The philosophy is you send the calls first. And if Clackamas, which now provides fire protection service for the area that formerly was known as Boring Fire District 59, if Clackamas happens to be closer than a boring unit, Clackamas will run a unit to the first alarm. Gresham also is coming, of course. It's their fire.
Right.
Let's say it's out of control. Goes to a second alarm. Clackamas will send a truck company and two more engine companies. Third alarm, two engine companies. And along the way, we've got a chief coming, too, on the second alarm. At the point that, excuse me, at any of those points, Clackamas has open spaces in their fire protection district. We call it fire FMZ, fire management zones. So those FMZs are covered then by volunteers, particularly on nights and weekends. You know, a lot of us work. I'm fortunate. I'm retired. I testified last year that there's no truth to the rumor that volunteers are getting older. Just ask me. But the volunteer becomes the career protection for, excuse me, I shouldn't have said that. The volunteer becomes the professional protection for the former career firehouse. We refer to ourselves as professionals. Some of us are professional and volunteers, and some of us are professional and career paid members. I hope that answered your question. The same thing happens, by the way, with Portland. The same thing happens with Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue in West Lynn. They are the three metropolitan areas that we interface with.
And could you expand on, since you have mutual aid agreements, that what the training qualifications, the expectations and training when you have
yes, the expectations, the expectation of the receiving department is that the firefighter who's responding from the giving department will be as well trained as the firefighter in the receiving department. Therefore, Portland, Gresham, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue expects that whoever's running into their district, and I'm sorry, I'm using terminology that goes with the fire service, whoever's responding within their district will have an equal, if not better, level of training than the folks that are in that district. That's the reason why the training that Dave mentioned for having particularly regionalized training would be very, very helpful. And I heard something earlier. I'm not versed in the verbiage of the bill, but I don't believe that the equipment that is being mentioned is the kind of thing like we're going to buy an aerial ladder at $900,000 or an engine company at $650,000. I think it might be we're going to buy a rescue tool to pry open a car door, that sort of thing, that can make the difference in life and death, literally. How quickly can we get you out of there and start treatment?
And Mr. Chair, that's what I did want to get on the record, is most people don't realize is that the training expectations out of the rural firemen are the same out of people that are getting paid in the cities. It's the same. And that really needs to be on the record, because that takes a lot of time.
Yes, sir. Sir, in the case, I can speak directly to that. In the case of a volunteer in Clackamas, it takes 3 evenings a month. This is once they've gone through the academy, it takes 3 evenings a month, excuse me, and then they work 36 hours of a duty shift during which training occurs. So they're basically working more than 2 full-time jobs. And I thank you for bringing it up. I knew it. Gee, I think everybody knows it. But yes, the training expectation is there. And you, as a citizen, deserve it. Because when you see me come to your house, or when you see Dave come to your house, you don't look at the back of his coat and see if it says C or V, career or volunteer. All you're looking for is help. And our job is to make the worst day of your life better.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that, you know, people realize that you're not the JV team.
No. No. Genova's house burned. Okay? Long time response. The first 5 minutes are worth the next 5 hours in a fire. They couldn't get there in 5 minutes. But they were able to save, as General said, the outbuildings, her neighbor's houses, her family got out. To me, that speaks a lot.
That's a common story across the country in rural areas. It's just, you know, dispatch time, it just takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all the questions we have. We're going to do some more work on this and come back to it in a week or so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
I don't think we have any other business before us on the agenda or otherwise, so if that's it, we will adjourn until next week. Another week goes by.